Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another Moraine Park Talent Talk podcast. I am Mindy Boynton, a business advisor in the Economic and Workforce Development Division here at Moraine Park. I'm excited to have my guest and colleague, Roy Krieger, a leadership instructor here at Moraine Park, to share and discuss ethical issues in the workplace. He is going to share with us how to think through a moral and or ethical dilemma that you may face in many different situations. So to get us started, can you tell us a little bit about your background in leadership, Roy, and why you feel this topic is so important to share with our listeners?
Sure, Mindy, and thank you for having me here. I'm quite pleased to do this. Just in terms of my background, I did spend 23 years in the U.S. Army as an infantry officer. I was put through quite a treadmill, a variety of various leadership positions while doing that. I ended up being a battalion commander, for those who know much about the Army. So I've had a lot of experience, practical experience, with a military twist. I got out in 2005. I retired then, and since then I've done a lot of things, which include 4 years adjunct leadership instructor for the leadership class in the organizational leadership program at Marion University here in Fond du Lac. I've done interpersonal and leadership training for 7+ years here at Moraine Park Tech College, working with students and mostly with businesses. And my side passion, 42 years of rugby, I'm estimating 2/3 of that probably I've been in leadership, field leadership, administrative positions, captain, coach, president. I've been on boards. I've been the union representative. And that's been with over 14 teams that I've been on. I mean, things that a person has passion for, it's easy to step up and be a leader. That includes a need for integrity. If a leader does not have integrity, the people that you want to have follow them or follow you just don't really want to. They don't trust you. And if they don't trust you, there's issues. So why is integrity important to discuss? And that's really, I want to talk a little bit about what integrity is and eventually get to techniques that we can use to help you, the listener. If you get caught where it's like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. You know, how do I think my way out of this? There are ways to think yourself out of it. And that's where we're going to eventually get to in this podcast. So just to kind of upfront talk about why I think integrity is important to discuss. You know, I have found it to be one of the most critical traits that followers, peers, bosses, and quite frankly, others, you know, look for in a leader. Not to mention just people in general. I mean, we look for this in the people that we're around. We all have our idea of what a person should be. It isn't always what their idea is, but we all have an idea. And quite frankly, people that could not care less about my integrity probably are not people I want to hang around with myself. So without integrity, as I mentioned, there is no trust. Without trust, there is no real teamwork. Without teamwork, there are just individuals. And with just individuals, people begin to look out just for number one, for themselves. And within organizations, productivity tanks and turnover increases, discipline problems increase, etc. So integrity from an organizational point of view, I think, is essential to the long-term success of a business. You can have short-term success with little integrity, but I can almost guarantee you, you will not have long-term success. So we as leaders, we're examples. We demonstrate, we live, we breathe integrity, or we should, but we're doing it 24/7. You know, we set the tone for our organization's culture, for our work ethic, the sense of right and wrong, and the sense of satisfaction that people have as members of an organization. If people are leaving your organization in droves, whether it's volunteer, whether it's a for-profit, a nonprofit, what have you, that speaks to there being issues. And I would look first at the leadership. It could be the benefits, it could be something else, but definitely always look first to the leadership. And look at it with the point of view of what's the integrity in that organization? Do people trust those who lead them? Do they trust their peers? You know, so it's easy to slip, and most of us will occasionally slip, but if we do, we've got to recognize that we've got to get back up immediately and make it better. It's really that simple, and that simple is also that hard.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing your journey, and I'm excited to hear more with your background in teaching at multiple institutions and the military. I also heard you drop the word integrity quite a bit. What do you mean exactly when you say integrity? It seems to be a word that's hard to explain and so complex. Is there an easy way that you define it? Or how do you explain this when you're talking and working with businesses?
Okay, that is a very fair question. And I knew you were going to ask me that, so I did take the time to write down my definition so I could read it verbatim. Again, it's not from the dictionary. If you look in the dictionary, it has simple one-word definitions like honesty, probity. Like, who knows what probity means? Simple things. And that does not at all describe the true meaning of the word. It's what I call an umbrella term. And that's just my term for it. But all that means is it is a word that is filled with concepts and a lot of other words that put together end up describing the word, in this case, integrity. So if I had to look at it, some of the words that define it are hard in and of themselves to define. Like when I ask people, and I do this in my integrity classes, is what's the difference between honesty and trustworthiness? Some people struggle a lot with that because they'll throw the words out, but when I say define that, because if you're using it, you should know what you mean. Some people can and more people can't. Another one is when we talk about just morals and ethics. I say, okay, so what's the difference between the two? Most people can't sit there when put on the spot and say, well, here's what the difference is. Some can, but most can't. So they're all important to integrity, but they're different from each other. And so integrity is the blending of a lot of terms. So the definition that I'll give you will take into account what I consider the two applications of integrity. One is being part of an organization, and the other is being as an individual. So here's how I describe it. Effective members of an organization think and act ethically, honestly, and trustworthily. They care for the common good, not just themselves. They apply ethical standards of behavior to daily work activities by taking pride in doing a quality job and being dependable to each other and to the organization. They take responsibility for their actions, and they foster an ethical work environment by taking initiative to proactively address questionable situations. And that, by the way, folks, is where a lot of people fail. They see something they know is wrong, and they just keep quiet. Individually, we're consistent in sticking to morals, to our morals and values. People also match their personal behaviors and actions to be in accordance with their own value system, their own moral principles, and organizational or societal ethics. So that's kind of a lot of words, you know, just to define integrity, but that's why I call integrity an umbrella term. There's a lot to it. That is a very meaty word, and that's why most people, when they think about it, they don't think hard about it because it's hard to think about. They know it when they see it, and they also know it when they don't see it.
So, Roy, you dropped a lot of additional words that I would love to explore through. But before I ask that question, you bring up a good point that people are witnessing unethical acts in the workplace and doing nothing. Do you have any examples or any thoughts behind why people aren't? Is it a fear of conflict or retaliation, perhaps? What have you seen, and why aren't people addressing it?
Integrity is a lot like education. We don't know what we don't know. If we've never really thought about it, we see things, and we may look at it and say, that doesn't quite seem right, and then we don't think about it anymore, in particular if we're not responsible for an organization or for an event. A lot of people just sort of like, whatever. They just look away, and they go, who cares? Other people see it and they go, that's wrong. And this is so wrong, I've got to do something about it. And part of the reason they say that if they're not in a leadership position is because of their personal morals and values. So shortly, I'm going to get into defining what that means. But one thing you had mentioned, the moral or ethical dilemmas, and what typically happens to create that whole situation is when a person's personal morals, you know, what they believe right and wrong, when they come in conflict with someone else's morals or with organizational ethics, that differ. That is where people get caught between what I call rock and a hard place. It's like, dang, what do? I think this is wrong, but I'm expected to do this, or that person wants me to do this, or I don't want to do, you know, whatever. That causes dilemmas, and sometimes it's very clear what's right and what's wrong, and sometimes it is really fuzzy, and our heads hurt, you know, and we go home and we stay awake all night thinking about going, gosh, I don't know what to do. Somebody help me out. So anyway, before I get into ways you can think through that, let me just describe a few things so that we're talking apples and apples here. You know, there's three words, morals, values, integrity, that they have a lot of variations in their definitions depending on who you read. And I'm not going to say that what I'm telling you is the right answer and everybody else is wrong, but I will tell you that this is a way of defining the three because they do stand for different things. So think about this. Organizations do not have a code of morals. What do they have? They typically have a code of ethics. Well, for a reason, because organizations don't have morals. They have ethics, which describe the behavior they expect their organizations, their members of their organization, to follow. Ethics are organizational. They're also cultural and societal. So I grew up on a farm. My graduating class was 48 people. The way we looked at life, our common culture that we had, was very different than, say, someone that grows up in the middle of a huge city that has a 600-person class. Outlooks are different based on our background. So morals tend to be an individual code of conduct for what one believes to be right or wrong, and they're generally taught belief systems to help one distinguish that good and wrong. And that tends to be part of our cultural background, where we grow up in, and what the society around us considers as a group right or wrong. So these all blend together, but there's distinctness. Ethics, organizational; morals, individual. So what are the values? Some companies will have, instead of a code of ethics, they'll have their values. All right, basically the same thing, because people understand the meaning of words to be different, but they end up conveying the same thoughts. Values, as I define it, they're very similar to morals, but they reflect the true character of an individual. They're deeply held beliefs that guide one's behavior. So, for instance, a person could believe that an action is morally wrong because that's what they think is good and bad. You know, it's bad, but it's, in this case, still the right thing to do because my values override what I've learned as morals. There are differences. And again, this can cause a moral dilemma. What do I do? I know what's right, what's expected of me, but gosh, in this situation with these parameters, I just don't think that's right. And that's where, as a side note, we use this thing called judgment, which you get good judgment from exercising bad judgment, as the old joke goes, we learn. But anyway, ethics, on the other hand, they're guiding principles, and they can sometimes be very specific depending on the organization. They act as a guide for how people should conduct themselves. And a code of ethics, it'll give a focus to individuals where they should place emphasis in their behavior. And again, I stress their behavior because I, as a member, as a leader in an organization, I can't make you, the individual, change your moral code. But as long as you're working with me, for me, for this organization, your behavior that you exhibit must match our company ethics. So there's a difference there. And if your moral code just cannot abide by our company ethics, we need to part ways. You need to go work somewhere else where you can fit in and feel comfortable about it, because you'll never be good if you disagree with how our company does business. Likewise, we as a company will never be able to get the most out of you as a worker that we would want, because you will be fighting us tooth and nail.
I find that fascinating, that our upbringing really does play a part in our morals and integrating them into many different work cultures where we need to align and we need to follow those code of ethics is really important. It's also been brought to my attention during this pandemic that a lot of those have been shook up because we don't always know how to respond to the unknown. I was talking with a company that had shared they had a very strict attendance policy. You know, you needed to be at work. That was part of your integrity. You show up on time, you clock in, you get started. You only have two absences. Well, that's been kind of thrown out the window during this pandemic. And it's caused a lot of people to think, should I hold those, you know, requirements and be strict on them so that people come in sick, you know, because they don't want to jeopardize their job or a training program. But then on the other hand, you know, we have to kind of learn from this and say, what's the right thing? It's really a judgment call. And that's been really hard with strict attendance policies, both in training as well as at the workplace. And I've heard a lot of companies kind of dealing with some of those. You know, we have our codes and we have our judgment. And I think that's really interesting. You bring that up and it's been very timely with people having to make those judgment calls these days during these times. So what are some of the other common ethical issues in the workplace that you've heard or experienced?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because almost any issue in society that people argue about, if you really dig into it, it generally boils back down to how they see the world. What are their values? What are their morals? Can people want the same end result, generally speaking? It's how we get there that differs. And one of the things that I've found is that my morals, for instance, may be very black and white. There's a very small gray area. Your morals, on the other hand, might have a large gray area in certain things. Just because of what you value, what you think is important, how you were raised, it really doesn't make it right or wrong, but it makes us different. And that's where that negotiation has got to come in, because I might say, no, period. That's it. I'm inflexible. Well, I'm just here to tell you as a leader that situations and circumstances and people require flexibility. And sometimes there can be too much flexibility. I mean, a person has to make a commitment at some point in time. Talking about common ethical issues in the workplace, I mean, there's all sorts of things we could talk about. But when you think about things from the perspective of personal morals running counter to organizational ethics, that creates an inherent conflict, as a for instance, or it could be two people that just disagree with each other. So some of the simple instances you gave, some that's a very astute and very common issue right now, and that's the attendance policy. My gosh, you know, I'm not changing it. Well, you know, there's a price to pay. You might think, well, that's not really ethical, but this ethical thought process can help companies and organizations and people think through this. But, you know, some of the variations could be somebody justifying taking an extra 5 minutes on break. It's okay because they work so hard. Well, it's okay for me to do it because I am such a hard worker. I deserve that. Or it could be something that somebody includes on their expense report that shouldn't be there, but they think it's okay because they got shorted on their last trip. So, you know, it's okay. Well, no, it's not from a legal regulatory point of view. But could it be from another point of view? Well, yeah. Well, now we got a dilemma, don't we? And so here's what I do. Instead of trying to get specific, I've done a lot of reading on this. And the more I get into it, the more I realize, gosh, this is so applicable, but it's deep. And we really got to look at it as an integrated whole. I find six categories of indicators that somebody is not really acting with integrity. I mean, anybody can do something, and in and of itself, it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't or do have integrity. But think about this. If people hide things, all right, think of it as an alcoholic hiding alcohol around the house. That would be an example. They're ashamed of it. They don't want other people to see it. It could be hiding my actions from other people. I don't want you to know that I said this or that I did this. Well, why are you hiding it from them? Sometimes there are security reasons why you hide stuff, but if you're hiding it just because you're embarrassed that somebody else would find out about it, look, that's an integrity issue right there. So that's one category. Another one is one of my personal pet peeves, and that's the hypocrite. Do as I say, not as I do. So I know what's right, and I'm going to make sure, by God, that you do it. But, oh, by the way, I don't have to do it because I have all these excuse. Well, that indicates to me a big lack of integrity. A third is excessive selfishness, you know, where it's all about me. Look, everybody is selfish to a degree. You know, even a person that's very altruistic that wants to volunteer to help people, they get satisfaction out of that. Well, you could say that's selfish, but it's helping other people. The excessive selfishness I'm talking about is when I will take from your needs just because I want to take care of mine. And I don't care about you. It's all about me. That is another clear indicator of a lack of integrity. Four is the slippery slope. This is kind of a catch-all, right? But think about this. You know, well, I don't lie. I'm a very honest person, and you can trust me. But, you know, I do tell little white lies because I don't want to make you feel bad. I don't really want to say this. You know, we could go down a path I don't want to go. And then I tell another lie. Before you know it, I'm lying all the time. Well, geez, I've kind of lost my integrity. I didn't mean to get there, but it started out small and it grew big. The same with greed. The same thing with shortcuts at work or in your personal relationships. Laziness. You know, working from home, this is something that I know a lot of employers worry about. Oh, if our people work from home, they're not going to be working. Well, you know, that is a trap people can fall into. Well, you know, I got to go do this. I'll be right back to my computer or whatever in 5 minutes, and 20 minutes later, they're back. And then they get caught up. And before you know it, that is a slippery slope that people can fall into. So again, one of the things to watch out for. Another is we only do things only when others are watching. And that's kind of interesting. It's like, that's the old, if I can get away with it, I will. You know, but if you're watching me, I'll do the right thing because, you know, that's what I do. And this is something leaders in particular, I've known a few that I thought were bad or known of a few that I thought were bad. That's how they acted. In public, they were one personality. This is how they do stuff. But in private, they did things different. And again, that kind of ties closely with do as I say, not as I do. Now, the last of these six is the one that tends to be the most sensitive. It's legal. It's not expressly prohibited, but that doesn't make it right. You name your favorite social issue. Is it abortion? Is it gun control? Is it bankruptcy? Is it breaking contracts? Is it sexual acts? You name it. There are people on all sides of the spectrum there. And what's legal, what's not? That's where when you talk to people that are in the law, what they say, look, we're not here as a legal system to define morality, although some people want laws to define morality. But what the legal system is intended to do is basically to protect the public and to keep law in order and general safety. That's generally speaking the idea behind law. But law doesn't always account for all these things that tie into our morals and our value systems, or even organizational ethics. So those are six general categories of indicators that you can take a look at yourself or anybody else and say, do they fall into that category? Do I fall into this category? And if you do, how many other people are seeing you falling into that category too? I mean, it's hard to hide a lack of integrity, folks. You can't hide it. Not for long. You can short-term, but not long-term. So ultimately, it boils down to three things. You know, when we get caught up in these moral dilemmas, you know, there's a right versus wrong. And sometimes, even though we know something is right, we really want to do the wrong thing. All right? Well, that's a little bit of a dilemma right there. That shouldn't be a big dilemma, but sometimes it is. There's also the right versus right. Look, if I'm damned if I do this, I'm damned if I do that. Now, if I do this, this is good. These good things happen, but these other things won't. So if I do this other thing, those good things will happen, but these things won't. I can't make everybody happy. I can't accomplish everything. It's one or the other. Which one do I do? And although this is where I differ from a lot of people that write a lot in ethics, I also call it the wrong versus wrong. It's like sometimes we get caught in a situation where for whatever pressures are upon us, we've got to do something we know is wrong. And the only options that we see are wrong options. So now we're trying to go with the lesser evil of the two or three or four, whatever it is. And that's a tough decision because you know no matter what you do, you're wrong. Whereas in the right versus right, at least you're helping something out. You know. And so the question, what do we do? I'm trapped. I'm lost. I don't know what.
That is really intriguing, too. The wrong versus wrong. And I've also heard it described as a double-edged sword, where people really find themselves in between the figurative rock and a hard place. What are some of these types of situations you've seen?
Okay, this is one that's been explored quite a bit ethically. And when I say explored quite a bit, there's four general categories. I tend to agree with this. Several authors, there's one named Kidder that's written extensively. There's four general categories that a person can think about and, in effect, kind of mentally rehearse what would I do in this sort of a situation. So let me give you the four. The first is truth versus loyalty. Which one's more important? Well, they're both important. Do they both represent components of integrity? Well, yes, they do. I'm loyal and I'm truthful. I'm honest. Oh, that's great. So what happens when they come into conflict? For instance, let's just say you've got a child in high school and you got a call from the principal that your child was involved in a school egging incident. All right, throwing eggs on the walls all over the classrooms or whatever. The principal calls in your child who was with the child's best friend and says, "Hey, Roy, I know we caught you throwing eggs, but we know there was somebody else too, and we know you were with them. Who was it? If you tell us, we'll let you off easy." Now I'm caught between a rock and a hard place. Am I honest and say, "Well, it was my best friend Mindy that was the other egger"? Oh, Mindy, great, we got her. Or do I remain loyal to Mindy and say, "I'm not going to tell you who the other person was"? But now I'm getting in more trouble because I didn't tell. You know, another way of looking at it is your best friend cheated on a test. You both took the same test, and that test determined who was going to get the next promotion. Your best friend cheated on it, you didn't, and you know it. That was your best friend. Man, you not only did he maybe take the job away from me, you know what else? He cheated. So do I tell management that my best friend cheated on the test and he shouldn't be promoted over me? I mean, what's the right answer here? They're not always black and white clear. It's kind of difficult. So that was one, truth versus loyalty. One that I personally think is probably one of the most common and most difficult things that people have to be put through. What do I do? Short-term versus long-term. One example would be, let's say I'm a single parent and I've got a young baby at home. I do know that right now with the welfare net, you know, that government, state, and federal provides, I don't necessarily have to work because I can get enough support to not work and raise my kid. But let's just say I've got a really good, strong work ethic, and I don't think it's right that I, in my mentality, leech off the system forever. I think I ought to be working. But, you know, if I do work, now somebody else is raising my kid during those hours when I'm working. And I'm not sure that I want to have somebody else raising my kid during these formative years. So what's the right answer? Well, I don't know. I mean, but there again, we're caught in a moral dilemma. What is the right thing to do, short-term versus long-term? Another, for instance, might be that I am looking for a job, and I need some money right now, so I'm pretty desperate for a job, and I take a job that pays pretty well, but it's got no real future to it. It's just going to be the same old thing forever. But pay is okay. So I could take that, or I could wait a few months and keep looking for a job that has a future, that maybe starts out with less pay, but I think I can advance a lot. Well, that's a short-term versus long-term. You've got to make a decision. What's the best thing? Well, I don't know. Right, you're in a dilemma, you know? So there's another one. A third is the individual versus community. So here's a classic example. Let's say you control a rail switch, and there is a train coming down the track, and there's a Y intersection coming up shortly, and it can go left or right, and you're the one that controls the switch. Well, on the left side of the track, there's one person tied to the railroad tracks that if the train goes left, it's going to run over that one person. On the right side, there's five people tied to the railroad tracks, and so if it goes right, it's going to run over five people. What are you going to do? Most people would probably say, well, have the train go left and run over one and save the five. Okay, great. So let's change the circumstances. That one person is your kid, your child, your son, your daughter. And the other five on the other track are five complete strangers that you've never seen before and probably would never see again. Who are you going to save? Well, it was just so simple when it was all strangers, right? I mean, we'll save the five for the one. Well, what about when it's the one that you know? There's a moral dilemma because there's emotions involved now. There's, you know, it's a different consideration. And there's a lot of variations on that. What if it was your mom on one side and your brothers and sisters on the other side? Which ones are you going to say? Well, geez, I don't know. You know,
those are tough questions, Roy.
But that's what makes it a dilemma, because although you may not be in this situation, your situation has the same sort of emotional impact. What the hell do I do? I don't know. So how do we think through that? Now, the last is one that people are probably pretty familiar with, justice versus mercy. And that is, do you go by the book or you bend the rules? There's pros and cons either way, right? So think the judge. All right, you're a first-time offender. You do something that was wrong. I can throw the book at you. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to be consistent in my standards. Or I could bend the rules because I think you've learned your lesson. I don't think you'll ever do this again, so I'm going to do something that's lesser that I think will stick with you. Again, a judgment call, but is it justice versus mercy? So those are the four general categories of where people can find themselves between a rock and a hard place, and they don't know what to do because the answer is not obvious.
Wow, you have shared great information and stories with us today. And I know you teach courses that go weeks, if not years, on this topic, because it is such a gray and great area to explore for many people. So I'm going to ask just one more question of you today. If listeners could take away one thing from our conversation, what would it be?
Well, before I get there, what I do want to make sure I highlight is ways to think through these dilemmas, because I just explained them. So, I posed a problem to you, and the question is, well, so what do I do? So what do I do, Roy? So let me give you some ideas, and then I'll give you a takeaway. So some ideas. One is, I'm a member of Rotary. I like it as an organization. We have a thing called the Rotary Four-Way Test, and it's four simple statements that we look at for a situation. You know, one, is it the truth? Two, is it fair to all concerned? Three, will it build goodwill and better friendships? And four, will it be beneficial to all concerned? So that's one technique that one organization, which I happen to be a member of, uses as a way of looking at a situation and saying, what's the right thing to do here? So that's one. Now, there's other techniques that are a little bit more general. You can use them before you fall into a situation, or when you're in it and you're trying to figure out a way to get out of it, there are things you can do. One is called ends-based thinking. What that means is, do the best for the largest number of people. So what do I do? Well, gosh, I just don't know. But if I do this, a whole lot of people will benefit. If I do that, just a few people will benefit. So that's one way of looking at it. That's one way of thinking through a situation. Another is called rules-based thinking. And that is, what's the law say? Do we have policies? Do we have regulations? Are there professional standards that we're expected to meet? That's rules-based thinking. That's another way of looking at these sort of situations. A third is called care-based. Now, you might have heard the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's the golden rule. So I care about people. How would I want to be treated in this? Well, there's a fourth that's just the opposite, and it's called the platinum rule. And the platinum rule is treating people the way they want to be treated, because the way I want to be treated may not be the way they want to be treated. So that's four general ways you can look at a situation. And people have asked me, Roy, which one of those is the best one? And I go, I don't know, you tell me. But if I don't know what to do, one of the things I stress to leaders all the time is you have to look at problems or issues from a multiple set of perspectives. This gives you four distinctly different perspectives of how to look at the situation, the dilemma that you're in. So when you're saying, gosh, I don't know what to do, well, put on this hat. How would you do it if you were going to do this? And you go through all four. And I'm not saying one's any better than the others, but when you look at all four and you put them together, you may say, oh, this kind of gives me a clue. There's other things you can do too. Those are four that take a little bit of thinking. You know, you can do the old intuition, the gut check, the stink test, I should say. You know, does it feel right? Because I'll tell you, if something just doesn't feel right, to me, that is just an accumulation of all your life experiences telling you, Roy, there's something wrong here. You need to look a little bit more before you leap. You know, so if you get that feeling, check into it. You know, will anyone get hurt? You know, how you define hurt, that's a whole other thing, too. It could be physically hurt. It could be emotionally hurt. It could be reputation-wise hurt. I mean, does anybody get hurt if you do one action or another? You know, what would you tell your kids to do? Most of us, when we put on the parent hat, we are very clear in what we want our kids to do and not to do. So what would you tell them? Why won't you do it that way? Would I want my friends and my family to know I did this? Is that something you would hide from them, or is it something you'd be proud of? How would others react to my decision? That's always a consideration, guys. How are others going to see what you do? Because that sometimes gives you insights into what is right and wrong, because we're talking about cultural and societal norms and expectations. Doesn't mean, again, that you must do that, but it's another consideration. Hey, would you want to be in the papers tomorrow? If I did something today and I made the TV headlines tonight and the newspaper headlines tomorrow, would you be proud of that? Or would you be putting your forehead, your hand on your forehead and going, dang, I wish that wouldn't have made the papers? You know, these are all just ways that you can very quickly determine, what should I do? The takeaways, your final question you asked me there, Mindy. You know, what would I say? I would tell you my suggestion when it comes to ethical decision-making, when you know that there's matters of morals and ethics involved, as much as possible, take emotion out of it, because emotion will very clearly sway you to one way. Typically, whatever you think are the most important values in this. Not saying they're wrong, but there's a lot of considerations in complex ethical decisions. It's not just about you. It's about others, too. So reason has got to control, not replace, control the emotions. Second, I would suggest be consistent. Nobody likes an inconsistent leader. People generally don't like it when they don't know what to expect out of someone. Some people do, but most people don't. And the third is, I'm a big believer in karma. You know, what goes around comes around. You treat people well, over time you get treated well. You treat people poorly, over time you get treated poorly. Anyway, that's kind of my takeaways on it.
Well, thank you, Roy, for covering such a complex and dynamic topic, considering that 53% of employees who reported misconduct in their companies said they experienced some form of retaliation, according to the National Business Ethics Survey. This is a very important topic to discuss and to cover and to provide tools to these employees who you shared most don't go forward, but also for the ones that do, as well as leaders who we also know are some of the prime suspects in committing these ethical dilemmas, for some tools and techniques and just great perspectives to think about as they're, you know, leading others and going through all of these various situations, both personally, professionally. There's so much more we could cover, and this has been a fascinating podcast. So we appreciate you and your expertise on this topic. And certainly, Marine Park offers a number of trainings and other workshops on this. So if you're interested in learning more, please visit marinepark.edu. You can also sign up for our newsletter to learn about other upcoming training opportunities, as well as future Talent Talk podcasts. That concludes today's session. Again, thank you for your time, and have a wonderful and ethical day.
Goodbye.